Our special guest now this hour, Jeff Allen Danilek, as we talk about 2012. And we'll be back with Jeff in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And this hour, we're going to talk about 2012, Extinction or Utopia, with J. Allen Danilek. He is, of course, a paranormal researcher and writer, exploring subjects from an objective scientific perspective. He's the author of many books about the paranormal. He's also written for the fine magazine called Fate Magazine. And besides writing, hobbies include science and Freudian subjects such as, of course, our favorites, Bigfoot, UFOs, and things that simply go bump in the night. Hey, Jeff, welcome back. How are you?
Hey, George, it's great to be back.
2012, Extinction or Utopia? Seems like we can go either way, doesn't it?
Yeah, you ask me on Monday, I'll tell you we're going one way. On Tuesday, I think it's the other way.
Which way today?
Today, you know, I tend to be an optimist, George. I try to look for the positive things in life, and I'm also a history major. So I look at the past, and I try to look for trends and how we're doing. And I think, you know, we're going to have some shaky times ahead, but I think in the end we're going to come out okay.
Let's talk a little bit about your research and your work. How'd you go about this one, Jeff?
Well, you know, I had been involved with doomsday prophecies ever since I was a teenager. I got into it with Hal Lindsey's writing, The Late Great Planet Earth. And that was kind of a part of my life for quite a few years. And so this was really kind of a natural extension of what happened to me many years ago, how I got kind of caught up in all of this doomsday mentality.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, there's a lot of people out there who get caught up in this, and they get very frightened about the future. And I thought maybe this would be an opportunity to maybe put a few people at ease a little bit, maybe look at the thing a little bit more objectively and see if there's really a reason to jump off the cliff or not.
And what did you conclude?
Well, you know, looking at the history of doomsday prophecy over the last couple thousand years, especially the last century, you'll find that there's a 100% failure rate among people who have predicted the end times.
Precisely. And they've all thought their moment would be the end times.
Exactly. You know, and they've always been quite sophisticated in how they came up with their numbers quite often. So you got to give these people credit. They really use their gray matter to kind of reinforce this delusion that they're coming up with, and they get a lot of people to follow them.
You know, we're going to be on the air that Friday, December 21st, 2012. We'll have a zillion guests. You're invited as well, Jeff. Pop in.
Oh, I will.
And I have a feeling as the clock continues to tick, we'll get right into Saturday morning, we'll get into Sunday, and Monday we'll be back doing it all over again.
Well, you know, I have a money-back guarantee on my book. If the world does end, I'm giving full refunds.
So. Yeah, you protect yourself. You're like Vegas odds, aren't you?
Absolutely.
Let's talk a little bit about the Mayans, though. They knew something. They knew astronomy. And why this date? I mean, why did they take it out that far?
Well, you know, they had a whole bunch of different calendars they used. They had a civil calendar. They had a religious calendar. They had all kinds of different calendars. One of them was called the Long Count, and it was 5,125 years. And what they did is they determined that there was a little wobble in the Earth's axis. We know about this. It's about every 26,000 years, the world kind of wobbles around one full turn.
Mm-hmm.
And they divided that into five periods of 5,125 years. And that was their how they divided up this great wobble in the Earth's axis. Why it came out to December 21st of 2012, that's just how they figured it. You know, the archaeologists looked at the drawings, they did the calculations, it ended on the winter solstice of 2012, and then the cycle picks up all over again. So the Earth completes one complete wobble and starts back, just like the odometer in your car. You know, it rolls over to 999,000 miles and starts over again at zero.
They were experts in astronomy. So I'm beginning to think maybe with the sun doing some strange things, maybe they knew something. Maybe around 2012, they can expect X flares or something. I mean, I'll tell you, I'll be one of the first, Jeff, that if something catastrophic happens, you know, I'm not going to say the Mayans knew, but I'm going to say this is really weird. This is bizarre.
Well, you know, it's interesting. In my research, I found that Mayans themselves don't believe that the Earth is going to end on that date. You know, this has been something that's been sort of picked up in the West, and people have run with this. But the Mayans are actually getting kind of peeved that we're coming out with these ideas. You know, but I think the Mayans did see this date as a time of renewal. They saw it as a change from one age to another, kind of like moving from the age of Pisces into the age of Aquarius, I suppose would be our Western equivalent. But they just saw that as a time of you know, kind of getting down with your bad self and kind of doing some introspection and figuring out where you want to go with your life. And they would have had ceremonies and things like this and rituals, but then they would have just gone on with it. The idea that it's all going to end on that date is really kind of a Western confabulation.
Probably a media one, too.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. In fact, it's hard to get on some of these shows if you don't believe it's going to end, you know? So it's kind of weird. It's really kind of
good. Nobody wants to hear that. Nobody wants to hear enlightenment, Jeffrey. Come on.
Yeah, that's boring.
You know, we want to know they knew something big and it was happening. I don't know. I still think the sun's got something to do with it. I mean, who knows? We'll have to find out in a few years. But what do you think? Possible?
Well, you know, the sun goes through these 22-year cycles with solar activity, and 2012 is the height of the next cycle. If you go back 10, you know, 11 years ago, it was a time of, you know, very little solar activity. You go back 20 years ago, and you find there was a lot of it back then, too. So what solar activity does, of course, when you get these peak times, is it'll affect satellite communication somewhat. It'll increase the aurora borealis around the North Pole, things like that. But in terms of doing any major disaster, I mean, we've gone through these cycles thousands of times, and you know, we survived each one of them. So unless 2012 is going to be unusual in some way in terms of solar activity, I don't know what we really need to worry about.
If something major happens, then what are you going to say?
Well, I'll say sorry. No, you know, really, it's one of those things where things are going to happen. I can guarantee it. There's going to be earthquakes and tsunamis and all those kinds of things that we're kind of getting used to, because that's just the nature of our planet. You know, you build your cities on fault lines, you're going to have a lot of people get killed when something bad happens. So we just have to take into account that bad things are a natural part of the cycle of life, just as good things are.
Now, you're a paranormal researcher, but you're generally kind of skeptical about things, aren't you?
Not everything. I'm very open to the spirit realm. I'm open to the idea of ghosts and extraterrestrial visitation and all these things. I just like to look at it from both sides. Instead of just kind of embracing one position and saying, this is what happened, I like to say, well, you know, why does this happen? What other alternatives are there? So my readers come away with a sense that they've got kind of a balanced approach to the subject, and they can make up their own mind. I have a lot of confidence in the reader's intelligence that if you give them all of the information instead of just part of it, that they'll usually pick out the best answer to the questions they have.
Oh, yeah, that's possible. That is possible. Well, as we get closer to this date, and you know, whether we see things happening or not, I guess it's going to get reported on more and more, don't you?
Oh, yeah, I think that there will be increasing hype about it, and that could be a very negative thing. But I always think, what's going to happen the morning after? You know, when this doesn't happen, there's going to be some fairly upset people out there. They're going to say, hey, you know, how can we trust anything you tell us? If every time you tell us the world's going to end, you know, Y2K was going to be the last, you know, big gasp. And then that turned out to be a flop. People after a while aren't going to believe you or believe the media outlets when they really have something important to tell them.
Bottom line is we're all going to make our own guesses, but who knows?
Well, you know, George, 100,000 people die on this planet every single day. For 100,000 people, that date is going to be doomsday.
Yeah, it is. It is, and they don't care about the next day.
That's right. It's over for you, my friend.
As a matter of fact, I was looking at some statistics, Jeff. 90,000 to 100,000 people die in hospitals from infections, not from what they went in there for. They're just in the hospitals. 90,000. So, I mean, this things change and change pretty quickly out here.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if you go around in your life always worried about things like that happening, and these, most of the people, most of the things we're worried about with doomsday are speculative. You know, there are things that could happen, but they're just speculation, and we're going around acting as though they're actually going to happen. As a result, we end up following people who really don't have our best interests at heart and have their own agendas. You know, they're trying to make a buck off of this stuff.
Let's talk about the doomsday prophets of the past then. Why did so many of them predict global apocalypse?
Well, you know, actually, they didn't. If you look at Nostradamus, you don't really see anything in his writings about doomsday. He does make these sort of vague predictions about things, but you don't really see, you know, he's talking about the end of the world there. People have kind of attached themselves to this idea of the end, and I don't know really why. I have a number of ideas I explore in my book about why people accept these things, but even the ancients didn't really teach the end of the world so much as we often assume they did.
Some civilization, by the nature of timing, probably will hit it and get right. I mean, if we get hit by an asteroid, for example, or if Yellowstone's caldera blows up or something like that, some civilization in whatever time period that may occur that talks about an apocalypse, they'll be the ones to say, see, we knew.
Yeah, I always say you only have to be right once, you know. And
yeah.
So if somebody, I suppose if you throw enough darts at the dartboard, eventually somebody's going to hit the bullseye.
Tell me a little bit about 2012 Extinction or Utopia in terms of how you get it.
Well, you can get it by going to my website, ourcuriousworld.com. I have a link that takes you right to the publisher. Or you can often get it in Barnes & Noble, Borders, any of the good bookstores, or offline on Amazon.
What are some of your favorite investigations in the paranormal world, Jeff?
You know, one thing I really have found fascinating over the last few years has been ghosts. I've been working with the ghost hunters, you know.
Oh, sure.
Grant,
good guys, aren't they?
They are wonderful guys. I just really like them a lot. They're very genuine, you know. They're a little skeptical, too, which I like. And that has been fascinating. And the people I've met through that, some really good people with some amazing stories. And that's probably been the highlight of the last few years, just in that realm right there.
And they've got some longevity. They've been on sci-fi for a long time.
Well, they brought some legitimacy to the whole subject of ghost hunting. It used to be kind of a woo-woo thing that people ignored. But now it's amazing how many people have had experiences that they didn't want to talk about before, but now they're willing to share them with you because of the work that Jane Grant have done. It kind of legitimized the whole field.
What has been your very favorite paranormal experience?
Well, the one I had personally was on board the Queen Mary.
Mm-hmm.
I was out there for a conference with the ghost hunters, and late one night I'm heading back to my stateroom, and down ahead of me in the hallway, they got hallways that go on for the length of the ship. I mean, it's a huge boat. I could see this gray mass on the floor up ahead of me, and I thought, what is this thing? You know,
yeah.
I'm walking towards it, getting closer and closer. I'm thinking, is this a cart? Is it a gray ball? And just as I get to the point where I'm almost close enough to identify, it kind of skitters around the corner. And I get down there and I look and there's nothing back there. And so I think, you know, what in the heck did I experience? You know, did I have an encounter with something paranormal? But it sounded very much like something that other people have encountered on board that ship. So I think that was probably one of the most interesting experiences I've had.
You too, Navy veteran like myself.
Uh-huh.
You ever use that in any of your work, that background?
Well, in my UFO book, I wrote a little bit about how the government works with secrets, confidential and, you know, top secrets and things like that. So I got to work a little bit with that part of it when I was in the service. I worked on an admiral staff. So that came in a little bit helpful. But really, for the most part, I haven't been able to use my military background really for doing research. That was just kind of a little part of my life that allowed me to kind of get my bearings and then move on to what I wanted to do with the rest of my life.
Do you think government will ever disclose? I don't.
Well, I don't know what they know. You know, anything that I would say is purely speculative on my part. Now, certainly there's good reasons that you keep certain things secret. Obviously, you know, military secrets have always been a part of our government. As far as UFOs, what they know is hard to tell. You know, obviously, they probably have some interesting experiences in terms of radar contacts, pursuit of extraterrestrial vehicles, things like that. But what they're going to tell is based upon what they actually know. And I, for one, do not know enough about what's inside the government to answer mm-hmm. that question intelligently.
Do you think the Mayans had some kind of advanced knowledge passed down to them, given to them by some ET force?
You know, I don't really think so. I think we tend to underestimate the level of intelligence of our of primitive people.
Yeah.
And so it's real easy to think, well, there's no way the Egyptians could have built this pyramid, or no way the Mayans could have built this temple without laser beams and UFOs. And I think, you know, sometimes we just really underestimate our descendants. And I think that they probably had a lot more going on than we imagine. After all, these people had the same brain matter that we do. They had just as much capacity for imagination and thought and genius as we have today.
Well, and it's possible, Jeff, they were more technologically advanced than we thought they were.
Yeah, we find evidence of that quite often. We're always surprised when we find something like the Anika Theory device, which was basically a little astrolabe, a little mechanical computer built over 2,000 years ago. It was built at a time when we thought, you know, it was all they could do to make a fire. And here these people were building little computers that they could manipulate and get all kinds of very accurate readings of the stars. And, you know, it blows us away what they can really do. The idea that they could have had experimented with steam engines and flight and even electricity is just starting to come to the surface. It's very astonishing what was back then.
Jeff, we still get reports of Bigfoot sightings, but we just don't get one physically. How come?
Well, you know, I've wondered about this myself. You know, I started out my paranormal career writing for Fate magazine about the Patterson film.
Yes.
And since then, I think that film has been largely authenticated as in terms of being a real animal. But I always wondered why they're so hard to find. And my thinking is on this is that we're thinking of them as an animal, and we need to think of it more as a human. I think it's closer to being a human than it is to being an ape. And if that's true, if it has all of the refined senses of an animal, you know, good eyesight, hearing, smell, and it has the intelligence of a human, it would be very difficult to find one. It knows where we're at. It knows what we're doing. It can probably move out of the area if there's people around there.
And we definitely don't want one shot.
Well, you know, here's the problem. You shoot the first one, then you can protect the rest of them. So once you can identify the signs, you've got a body, you got a carcass.
Do you advocate that, Jeff?
I think that this has been talked about inside the science community, but the only way that you can establish it outside of capturing one, obviously, if you could capture one, that would be ideal. But unable to do that, the only way to protect them is to prove that they're there, because they can't do anything until you can demonstrate they're actually an animal.
You know, the problem, though, with our society, we might capture one, but we should let it go.
Well, the idea here of capturing, or even, heaven forbid, killing a Bigfoot, is to establish its existence. At that point, you know, right, you don't need to keep it. In fact, you would probably want to send it back into the wild so you could track it.
They'll make some zoo or some carnival to buy it.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is once you find this creature, then it suddenly just becomes another zoological oddity. It loses a lot of its mystique.
That's the problem. Jeff, stay with us. We're going to take some phone calls about all things paranormal with you. We're with Jeff Allen Danilek. His latest work is 2012, Extinction or Utopia. But as you heard him, he is a paranormal researcher and deals with everything we deal with here on Coast to Coast AM. So the lines are open for any question you may have. I'll be back. And we'll take your phone calls with Jeff Allen Danilek in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Are you a Streamlink member yet? For just pennies a day, you can be. You would not believe how many people simply podcast the program now, too. So they just plug it into their computer, and they've got the whole program there in the morning. Very convenient. So you can join Streamlink by just going to coasttocoastam.com. Jeff, you've written books, The Case for Ghosts, Atlantis, Lessons from a Prehistoric Civilization, UFOs, The Great Debate, 2012, Extinction or Utopia. What are some of your favorite subjects? I guess all of them.
Well, yeah, they're all my children, you know, each one has the kind of things I like about it and things I don't like about them. I also co-authored a book with Stan Romanek recently, and that was really interesting to get involved with an abduction case like that. So really, to say which one is my favorite, you know, it's like saying which one of your kids you like the most. But in terms of just interest, the ghosts has always been really fascinating to me, the reincarnation. And the UFOs. I mean, that's really kind of an interesting subject out there right now.
All right. We've got a half hour of phone calls to go. Let's go to Alma, Michigan, east of the Rockies. Mike, you're on with Jeff on Coast to Coast.
Hello. Good morning.
Morning.
Yes. I just wanted to talk about a haunting that my sister may have had last night.
A haunting. Okay.
Yeah, I think maybe it could have been sleep paralysis or something. But anyways, she was awoken several times during the night, and when she woke up, when she woke up, she saw these dark figures in the room, and she could feel their presence. She says, first time it was just one of them, and she just had this terrible fear of it. And then they would just kind of rise up, and they would rush back to her body, and she wouldn't see him anymore. And this happened several times. And one time it was just one person, and second time it was a couple people, and she thinks she might have even heard one of them scream. So I don't know if it was actually a haunting or maybe she just woke up there in some kind of a dream state, but she was up all night doing it and screaming, too.
How do we know if it's a haunting, Jeff, or just, as he said, sleep paralysis?
Well, the first thing you look for is a history of paranormal activity in that house. If that's something that's occurred before where people have had experiences of a paranormal nature, then you could it's probably more likely paranormal. If, however, there isn't any history of that, then more likely it's probably what he said, sleep paralysis. People do have very vivid dreams sometimes. They can watch things on TV. They can get them very upset, maybe subconsciously, not even know it, and they will manifest themselves in the dream state. So, again, that's what I would look for first, is the history of paranormal activity.
Okay. Anaheim we go. California-wise, west of the Rockies, Donald. Hey, Donald.
Hey, good evening, gentlemen.
Hey.
Hey, okay, I myself feel that people worldwide who have a wholesome fear of their creator and are conscious of having needs greater than physical, mental, and emotional ones are being gathered for the purpose of restoring the conditions intended for the earth. And in this, those who would refuse to connect with the source of this elevated consciousness would be refusing to connect to the source of the one who could reward them with everlasting life in the paradise. And refusing this connection would contribute to the complete demise of these disconnected people worldwide. They pretty much like do it to themselves. That's just my feeling. I wanted to know what you feel is the fate of people who are connected and the people who are not.
Okay, well, I think that we're all on a spiritual journey and that some of us are closer to the light or closer to consciousness than others aren't. And if you're close to the consciousness, if you've connected to source, then you're going to reap the benefits of that. You're going to have a greater consciousness of yourself. You're going to live in a world that's more of a paradise. And if you don't do this, you're not going to be punished for it, but I think you're going to have consequences. That is, that you're not going to be as happy. You're going to feel a lot more frustration in your life. But you'll go through the process because that's part of the growth process, part of the learning process. And each life, you come back into it again to learn the new lessons that you failed to learn last time, or maybe to build upon the lessons that you did learn. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but that's how I kind of look at it.
Jeff, do you think that more and more people are interested in the unusual, the paranormal, than, let's say, 10 years ago?
Oh, absolutely. I think that it's become mainstream, and that's the big difference than it was even a few years ago. Shows like Ghost Hunters and things like that, people are much more open to spirituality, to different concepts about God. They're not so rigid as they once were. So I see that as a very positive thing in our spiritual development.
Okay, back to the phones we go. Joseph in Dallas, Texas, east of the Rockies. Joseph, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment on what that gentleman had said earlier about the his sister being haunted.
Yeah.
The shadowy figures.
Yes.
Well, my girlfriend actually, she's had a similar thing her whole life, and it's like halfway between she's dreaming and it's real. But I mean, it scares her every single time. And it's the same type of thing, only in her, and when she sees it, there's music, like drumming, something like that. That's really all I had to say. But it's just, like the guy was saying, is it something from person to person, or is it something to do with the environment you're in?
It could be everything, Jeff.
Yeah, there are people who I believe are sensitive. There are people who kind of pick up on spiritual energies easier than other people do. And sometimes if you don't know you have this ability, it can be very frightening because you might perceive things that other people aren't. And if you can't explain it, it tends to scare you a little bit. So I don't know if that's the case with this gentleman's girlfriend or not, but I do believe that if you're not aware that you have a sensitivity to paranormal activity, it can be a very scary thing to have.
Just did a show about a month or so ago on Charles Fort. And I've got to tell you, the stories that he originated in his day were absolutely enlightening and riveting and compelling. They were just incredible. Incredible.
Well, yeah. Well, Charles Fort was the one who got all this stuff started off. He was the first one who cataloged.
Yes, he was.
All these different stories, and they became really legend.
I still like the rocks that fell from the sky.
Yeah, it's always interesting how they get there, you know?
Yeah. Let's go to Armando, truck driving in Arizona, west of the Rockies. What's up, Armando?
Yeah, good evening, both of you. Good to talk to you, George. I just wanted to say that for all the truck drivers, it's a real good show for all the ones that drive late at night. You know, it keeps us awake.
Keeps you going.
Yeah, I just wanted to say thanks, you know.
Of course, you guys keep the country going, so thank you.
Well, yeah. Sort of. So, but anyways, I wanted to speak about the 2012 thing. Are they? I know they say it's Friday.
Friday the 21st.
December.
Yep.
At what time is that supposed to happen?
I think it's 11:11 p.m. Believe it or not.
Is that Eastern Pacific?
You know, I think it's Eastern time.
Okay, because I was just wondering if you live like on the. On a certain part of the world, you know, that it's a different time. I mean, you could kind of track that thing down to where it's happening. In the
it got them first, right? Yeah. That's a good point.
That's exactly what happened with Y2K. You know, it would hit the east, you know, Europe first, and then it would come westward, and everybody's watching to see what was going to happen.
And nothing happened. One could say, though, Jeff, that we prepared ourselves so nothing happened. I'm not sure. Maybe nothing would happen anyway. What do you think?
Well, you probably would have had some software issues on some computers. But in terms of what they were describing, entire air traffic control networks going down and nuclear power plants, you know.
And banks melting. Failing and everything else.
I mean, that was a little extensive. But, yeah, I mean, yeah, they put some patches in there, made sure that the computers continued to operate. I suspect most people would have picked that up anyway when they came in Monday morning and the computer was showing 1900, you know, instead of 2000. But other than that, I don't know. I've heard that before, that, hey, we prevented this disaster by being ready. And I think, well, that's kind of a way out of it, I guess, as opposed to just admitting you were wrong, I suppose.
What is one of the greatest paranormal stories you've heard?
Well, you know, the Stan Romanek story is spectacular. I mean, this guy has been visited by extraterrestrials. He's been abducted multiple times. He's got evidence for it. He's got implants in his body. I mean, when I looked through this stuff, put together this book for him, I was bowled over by all of the things that happened to him. And, I mean, he has enough stuff for 20 people to have happened to him. To have just all this happen to one guy is extraordinary.
He took a polygraph test with us.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't pass. He claims he was on medication. And I guess he should have just refused to do it at that time, huh?
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with Stan. You know, he's obviously an eccentric personality type. And I understand that, because a lot of people in the paranormal are. But from what he described to me, that there was a tendency to repeat a question over and over and over again. I don't know if this is true. Maybe you can confirm this or not.
I wasn't there. I got a transcript from this.
Mm-hmm.
The polygraph examiner came highly recommended from out that way. And this was a year and a half or so ago. And this was just about that episode of that alien peering in through his daughter's room. Remember that one?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Boo. That was the one they called it.
Yeah, that's what the test was on. It wasn't about any other experience that he might have faced.
Well, I would like to know more about how the polygraph is done. I would like to have seen the entire video of it, mm-hmm. from beginning to end, rather than just transcripts, to really get kind of an idea of it. Like I said, I don't know. I wasn't there when these things supposedly occurred to Stan, but if he's hoaxing this stuff, if he's making this up, he's brilliant. I don't know how he's doing it. And I don't know anybody who can figure out how he's doing it. It's easy to say that someone's lying. That's the easy way out. That's what the people with Skeptical Inquirer do.
What do you think of the Billy Meyer case? That one fascinates me.
I don't know a lot about that. My understanding was that he was pretty thoroughly repudiated, but then you can always find other people come along and say, no, he was the real deal. I do know that I've talked to a couple of other radio hosts who have dealt with the story and actually received threats from people when they tried to expose him.
Really?
And I thought, well, that's interesting.
Well,
I don't know.
He's been shot at 7 times himself.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Yeah. That's what, that would be probably something I should look into. But I think it's Billy Myers. I don't know if he's as active as he used to be. I mean, this is something that was
He's getting up there in age.
20 years ago, I think. So when you work with the paranormal, you want to try to keep it more contemporary.
Let's go to Carlsbad, California. Ryan, it's your turn. Go ahead, Ryan.
Oh, hey guys. Good morning.
Hey.
Hey there.
I was listening earlier, and I just have to share this story. When I was younger, my parents, I'm from New Mexico. My parents and I were moving to another part of New Mexico, and we're driving late at night.
Mm-hmm.
On the side of the road, in the middle of nowhere, out on the reservation, there's a dumpster from the neighborhood, and there is a Bigfoot. An actual Bigfoot that was actually digging through the dumpster.
Looking for a little food, no doubt.
Yeah, exactly. And I remember that because I was about, say, 7, 6, and my parents actually threw me in the back of the car because they didn't want me to see it, but I got a peek of it in.
Why didn't they want you to see it? They just thought you'd have nightmares, you'd be scared?
Yeah, pretty much, yes. They didn't want me to see it because I would have gotten scared, but I got a peek of it, and I always ask them about it. I still don't believe it myself, but I'll ask my mom and dad about it, and they're like, yeah, there was one.
That's a neat story. Jeff, regardless of what Bigfoot is, my take is that there aren't a lot of them. Maybe 1,000, maybe 2,000, not a lot.
Yeah, I tend to agree. You would only need about 200 or 300 to have a viable population. If they have a similar kind of physiology to humans, they might only have 4 or 5 offspring in their lifetime. So you wouldn't need a huge number of them. But yeah, that makes sense, that there would be a few. What's kind of interesting, though, is that they're so spread out across the United States that they were all localized.
Yeah, they're everywhere.
Almost every state in the country, I think. There's only been 2 or 3 states that have never had a Bigfoot sighting, that's like Hawaii and like, Rhode Island or something, but everywhere else they've been seen. So I think that's curious.
The Yeti story of the abominable snowman still fascinates me ever since I was a kid.
Oh, absolutely. I think they're getting close to finding something there. There's been a couple of teams that have gone out there and gotten some interesting footage and some casts. So I'm thinking that with the accessibility of that area now, which was closed off for so many centuries, that the chances of finding something, because it's in such a restricted geographic area, is much better than it would be for, say, Bigfoot, because he has such a wide range.
Let's go to Greenville, South Carolina, east of the Rockies. James, you're up with us.
Good morning, guys.
Morning.
Thanks.
Here lately, I've been woken up at 3 a.m. A lot, and last week it happened again, and I heard kind of a growling or grunting next to the bed. I just passed it off as one of our cats. It happened again. I took a cat head count. It wasn't the cats. Went back to sleep, woke up at 6 a.m., got ready for work, and I had six sets of scratches, three scratches per set from left to right, from my chest down to my abdomen.
Wow.
And I was just wanting to know what you thought about that. I was thinking maybe it was something like a mock against the Trinity or something evil. I just wanted to know what you thought. I'll take my answer off there. Thank you.
You know what? If it's authentic, it would be evil, because something that's benevolent is not going to scratch you like that.
No, that reminds me of that Atchison, Kansas case where the gentleman actually had the scratches across his body. They actually filmed it while it was happening.
You could just see the cut marks,
huh? You could see the welts rising on his skin right in front of the camera. It was a pretty well-documented case, pretty famous. And that's what it reminds me of when he was telling me this story, that something is a little upset with him. Now, my question would be, too bad he left it online, but I would want to know if he'd had a series of incidents leading up to that, or if it's just out of the blue this just happened, because usually these things
are a culmination
of a whole series of events.
And sometimes people conjure this up, even though it's real.
Well, yeah, the power of the mind is extraordinary, the things that you can do if you believe certain things. And I think if you believe that you're being haunted, it's possible you could manifest evidence of it in your own life without even knowing you're doing it.
Jeff's website, ourcuriousworld.com, his latest work, 2012, Extinction or Utopia. What are you setting your sights on next, Jeffrey?
Well, I have another book coming out on reincarnation here this year. It's going to be a little bit more of the spiritual slant to it.
Interesting.
And I'm hoping that one kind of gives people some insight on how reincarnation works. It's not so much about proving it exists, but how does it work if it's real?
We got to get you together with Dr. Bruce Goldberg. That should be one fascinating moment. Jeff, thank you for being on the program. I appreciate it so much. And don't forget, we'll be live from San Diego on our Friday night show with some open lines, and also the numbers lady is getting ready with some of her predictions. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punted, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.